welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. So, October 30th is a day designated by the African Union as the Africa Day of Food and Nutrition Security. The day is intended to raise awareness on issues of food security, chronic hunger, and malnutrition in Africa. Development experts and UN agencies say that despite remarkable economic progress across Africa, especially in the last decade, many of the continent's people remain food insecure. And the UN estimates that over 200 million people, representing 30% of the population, suffer from chronic hunger and malnutrition. The situation is worse in areas where there's conflict. Now, for example, reports show that people in parts of northern Nigeria and the surrounding region, these are areas affected by the Islamic Boko Haram militants, that people in these areas face acute food shortage. But even in areas where there is no conflict, low agricultural activity and poor diets contribute to the food insecurity for millions of people in these areas. So on the show today, we'll look at a new UNICEF report that finds a high number of children suffering from the consequences of poor diets and a food system that is failing them. We'll also ask the question, what can we do to reduce food insecurity in Africa, on a continent that has around 600 million hectares of uncultivated arable land? This is Upfront. Let's start by listening to your opinions on our topic. How do you define food insecurity?
My name's Kinsambwe. I would say that is the possible way of which someone can be secure or sure of his or her food today and tomorrow. Yes.
Food security, protection of food, to ensure that the food is secured and there is nothing like anything that is gonna cause harm to the people. My name is Augustine Lusangwa, and this is my home village, Kahuku, Kampala.
I'm Asimu Stella Prila. Then food security is when you have food like in your house.
My name is Nakazima Great. What I understand for food security is when you have plenty food and you remove some, you cook some and you keep some.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to thank all our listeners who sent in their opinions on this topic today. We are talking about food insecurity in Africa. Even though the continent has made considerable progress over the years, we have some of the fastest growing economies in Africa. There's also less conflict on the continent, aside from pockets of unrest in places like northern Nigeria, in southern Cameroon, and South Sudan. But on the whole, there's no doubt that we have more stability on the continent right now than at any point in the last five decades. But there is still high levels of food insecurity on the continent. And that's the issue we are trying to explore today on the show. But before we get into the causes of food insecurity, first, let's understand what that means. And for that, I've reached Maggie Ferris Morris. She's the chairperson of World Hunger Education Service, a global NGO with headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Hey, Maggie, thank you very much for joining us on the show today. Let me first start off by asking you, how do you define food insecurity? And is hunger the same as food insecurity?
Hunger is not exactly the same as food insecurity. Hunger is something you experience when you've not had enough to eat. It could be a feeling you've had that is a temporary feeling, or it could be over a long period of time when you experience hunger that isn't satisfied. One may be considered food insecure if you've had it, you've had the feeling of hunger for a long period of time. So the Food and Agriculture Organization defines food insecurity as a situation that exists when people lack secure access to sufficient amounts of safe and nutritious food for normal growth and development and an active and healthy life.
And what are some of the primary causes of food insecurity? What are some of the situations that lead to food insecurity?
The things that lead to food insecurity are poverty. Is a principal cause. Hunger can also be a cause of poverty. Mm. It's a cyclical relationship.
But is it possible that you could be in an area that is prosperous or rich or affluent and still be food insecure?
You can be if there's not, if you are poor or there's not access to food that is that you need for your body. So poverty is the principal cause of food insecurity and hunger. And conflict also contributes to food insecurity and hunger. The basic cause also include all the socio-cultural, economic, and political contexts of where people live.
So if you live in an area that is experiencing a drought, or like say in parts of Southern Africa that have been hit hard by El Nino, then you're most likely to face a situation of persistent or constant food insecurity. And if you live in an area where there's conflict, say northern Nigeria, where there's conflict, that there will be also food insecurity. Let me ask you this, Maggie, real quick. How do we explain the fact that in the age of economic prosperity, the continent has been doing very well, a lot of economic growth around all around, also a lot of technological advancement and in food science, in our knowledge of nutrition and all those issues around how to better feed our bodies. How do we explain that we still have millions of people experiencing food insecurity? What are some of the ways to explain that?
As I just mentioned, in this conceptual framework of malnutrition, your basic causes are still exist in many, many countries where you have inadequate financial and human resources, the distribution and access to food is unequal, you have your inadequate access to services, particularly health services. Those exist around the world, and until those basic causes that contribute to malnutrition and hunger are eliminated or ameliorated, I should say, you're going to continue to have hunger. Mm. We do have enough food in this world to feed everyone. It's a matter of the distribution of food.
Is there hope that the world can solve the issue of food security? And as you're telling us that, maybe you can also tell us a little bit about what your organization does.
Okay, let me start by telling you about World Hunger Education Services mission. We have been around for 43 years, and we started out by educating Congress about hunger issues. And our mission is to undertake programs that educate the general public and target groups about the extent and causes of hunger and malnutrition in the United States and worldwide, to advance the comprehension, which integrates ethical, religious, social, economic, political, and scientific perspectives on the world food problem, and to facilitate communications and networking among those who are working for solutions, and finally to promote individual and collective commitments to sustainable hunger issues. I do believe we should have hope, although I have to say it is a complex issue. I think we produce enough food currently, as I mentioned. Governments need to have the will to address food insecurity in their populations. Conflict needs to be mitigated to allow people access and availability to food. And lastly, education of women and children is needed to help break the cycle of poverty and hunger. There's a lot of research out there now on the importance of girls' education as a factor to reduce hunger. But these are long-term issues. So, yes, I'd say there is hope, and we are headed in the right direction.
Maggie, thank you very much for talking to us today.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. We're talking about issues of food insecurity or food security in Africa. And let's go to Southern Africa, and specifically in Zimbabwe, where food insecurity has left half the country in need of aid, that is food aid. Our reporter Kuzai Zivanashe looks into this situation.
Non-governmental organizations are mobilizing resources that will carry food insecure Zimbabweans to the next harvest. The World Food Programme's Joao Manja explains the situation.
We have just received a report from the Zimbabwe Vulnerability Analysis Committee, which presents results of the most recent assessment in rural and urban areas. The food security situation has deteriorated compared to the previous season. Last year, as you know, was also bad for food security, where we found during the lean season about 50% of the population being food insecure.
Manja explains what has caused the food insecurity.
That was mostly influenced by the generalized drought in the whole country, in most parts of the country. And of course, it's usually compounded by the economic challenges that the country is facing now.
Statistics suggest that about 59% of Zimbabwe's population in rural areas will be food insecure during the lean season. Manja says urban areas are also affected and the food that's available there is selling at prices that many may not afford. He explains the work that WFP is doing.
Now, we have a big program which is meant to help people bridge the gap now from one harvest to the other, given the failure of the harvest now and the detected number of food insecure population. And this program is called Lean Season Assistance.
He adds that with the help of implementing partners, they have been assisting the bulk of the population. The rural population pins hope on the next harvest to achieve food security, while those in the urban areas hope for an economic recovery that will usher in jobs, a stable economy with an affordable cost of living. While hopes for a bumper harvest and a vibrant economy remain, Zimbabwe has been characterized by runaway prices in the market. The latest price hike was bread, a top staple food, which increased by over 50% overnight this week. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And let's stay in Zimbabwe, where drought is taking its toll on the country's agricultural sector, with farmers in the western part of the country getting hit the hardest. Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
Officials in the Ministry of Lands, Agriculture and Rural Resettlement confirm state media reports that the drought has claimed close to 5,000 in Matabeleland South Province, a 500% increase over last year, but there could be thousands more deaths. The provincial crop and livestock officer for Matabeleland South, Simangali Pingwabi, speaks on the matter.
Still cases out there which don't have access, which farmers have not reported. So the figure might be higher than what.
For farmers such as Chris Grant, who specializes in small livestock, climate change should no longer be an excuse. The losses are part of a recurring trend in the past 5 years. He argues that with proper planning and commercializing farming operations, cattle losses are avoidable.
To me, it's just planning. Droughts are there. They're not going anywhere. We need to change the mindset. So I know the one guy got these massive ox. They're 10 years old. And I'm saying, but why? I like to look at. And so, yes, the cultural practices are wrong. So we have to educate the people. Education to say, no, well, listen, got 15 cows. There's a drought this year. You only have to sell 3 or 4. You'll keep the rest. When they give birth, your numbers will go up. And your cattle, you shouldn't be looking at them. Yes, they should be run as a business.
Grant says that it makes no sense for rural farmers to hold on to their livestock instead of selling them to buy supplementary feeding for the remaining animals. He believes education of rural farmers is lacking. Muhle Masuku, a farmer and director of Livestock Zone, sees traditional norms regarding cattle specifically as being counterproductive and retrogressive.
In our culture, life is a status symbol. So again, the game of numbers kind of come into that, then inhibit drastic action. Like selling, that's reducing the numbers. The cultural practice is coming to it in a big way.
Masuku believes farmers have to strike a balance between selling cattle and maintaining draft power requirements. Observers say rural extension support services to farmers is hampered by lack of resources given the deteriorating economic situation within the country. Ngwabi from the Lands and Agriculture Ministry concurs.
You are talking about outreach, you know, some of these areas, they are remote. You need resources to get there. You need more, so we are thin on the ground without transportation. Especially our situation in Matabeleland South, you see the distances involved are vast.
Ngwabe believes there is a need to adopt hardier cattle breeds.
We are recommending indigenous type of breed. Like in Matabeleland South, we are blessed because we've got the tule that does very well under such conditions. Those are the types of animals that we could be using. Indigenous breeds are ideal because they are adapted to the environment.
Ngwabe also believes in pursuing small livestock farming, which 80% of the households in the region keep. She believes this path could mitigate against the losses that cattle farmers are experiencing. Grant agrees, adding that goats are not only sensible, considering just how hardy the animals are, but goat meat prices are beating beef on the market. Beef per kilogram is selling at an average of $1.15 compared to with goat at $2.30. The situation of drought is not bound to change anytime soon. According to the country's Met Department, rains that were expected in September didn't materialize. Meanwhile, crop failure and livestock deaths compound the country's food security situation, with more than 5 million people at risk and in need of food aid. Animals, especially cattle, are critical as a source of income as well as draft power. Given the drought and cost of dipping chemicals and vaccines, which are at a reported $400 a dose, the situation looks dire for rural farmers unless something urgent is done to save the national herd. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, Upfront. My name is Gazbo Prosper. I'm in Kampala City, the capital city of Uganda. I'm a boda rider in Kampala. I love listening to Upfront Africa on Voice of America.
Waiting the shell, people, you listen to Jackson Vunganya on the Voice of America.
I go to war for your case. I go to court for your case. I climb a bridge for your case. Enter water for your case. I punch a judge for your case.
My name is Muchibi Francis. What I understand is that there is enough food for consumption, and there's no any danger of hunger or any worry in terms of feeding.
My name is Tuhaire Monica. Food security is that kind of food that you eat secures your body from either those diseases, what, like eating fruits. That's how I understand it.
My name is Merrick Christian Timothy, and my thought on food security is like, the way you can see countries are suffering, like, let me say they're suffering from famine, there's a lot of drought, like, there's always at least some backup that you're supposed to have. Like, you open up maybe food shelters whereby, you know, you can at least help the people in the future.
My name is Shanita Nantongo. So when I hear food security, I think about the hygiene of the food, where you eat your food from, where the food is kept, things like that.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. If you're just joining us, we're talking about some of the causes of food insecurity on the continent. The World Food Program says that in many areas around the continent, malnutrition rates surpass the 15% emergency threshold. And that data is further supported by a recent UNICEF report that finds that a high number of children are suffering the consequences of poor diets and a food system that is failing them. In fact, UNICEF recently published a report titled The State of the World's Children 2019, Children, Food and Nutrition. And in that report, it finds that at least one in three children under five is either undernourished or overweight. The report also says that two in three children aged between 6 months and 2 years of age are not fed food that supports their rapid growing bodies and brains. And this puts them at risk of poor brain development, weak learning, low immunity, increased infections, and in many cases, death. For more on this report, I've reached James Elder. He's the UNICEF Regional Chief of Communication for Eastern and Southern Africa. Mr. Elder, thank you very much for joining us here on The Voice of America. So the report that we're talking about today talks about an inability by families in Eastern and Southern Africa to provide balanced meals for themselves and their kids. How can this be addressed? And is this where governments step in? And what would be their role short of just handing out food rations?
Well, there's lots of different roles. But yeah, first and foremost, yes, in Eastern and Southern Africa, when we're looking at that most important age, say 6 to 23-month-old children, only about one in eight are getting that minimal acceptable diet, which means the right quality and the right quantity. So what can governments do? Well, governments, first of all, can absolutely, they can make sure that nutrition counselling exists everywhere. They can improve nutrition education and understanding for people, so people have a sense of what foods are the right foods. Breast milk, you know, breastfeeding in the first 6 months of life is the most critical thing for a child. So governments can make sure that women have maternity leave or they have places at work and so on. Equally, when children get sick, go to health centres, governments need to make sure there's micronutrient powders. So there's lots governments can do. Happily, there's also things families can do. Unfortunately, in Eastern and Southern Africa, so much of the reason for this undernutrition is because of affordability. So it's important families understand that some local foods, you know, milk, an egg, ground nuts, local fruits, getting those to your children each and every day and making sure they're eating once a day for the littlest ones, they're all really important. Mm. So everyone has a role, government, private sector, and families.
And the report says that children are eating poor diets early on in their lives, many suffering from deficiencies in vitamins and essential minerals. Is this because of lack of food or lack of knowledge about nutrition on the part of their caretakers?
Some of it's due to lack of food. The climate crisis is very, very real. You know, whilst some leaders in rich nations may get around the issue, there are some people in the poorest parts of the continent who are living through the climate crisis right now as we speak. So you go from having a drought to a flood, and a drought to a flood makes it very difficult to keep there. So that's one very key issue. Affordability is another. People just don't have the ability to eat those right foods, you know, to be eating fish for calcium or beef for vitamin A or chicken for iron. Those things cost money, and that's why it's so important that people understand the local fruits, the nuts, the eggs, things that are hopefully available and a little bit more affordable. So it's a mix of food production due to the climate change and the cost for some people who are on the margins, which of course is the dark irony, because those people who can't afford it, their children will suffer from undernutrition. It will impact their ability going forward at school, and it will, you know, perpetrate this cycle of poverty.
And how do you explain then the dichotomy of an increase in cases of overweight and the obesity, which is documented in this report in some parts of Africa, when in the same areas millions of children are still undernourished?
It's a terrible ask, isn't it, that we've got millions of children are eating too little of what they need, and you know, millions others are eating too much of poor diets. Food production at the moment is really concentrated in the hands of a small number of businesses, and that's allowing those businesses to shape the options of children's everyday diets. So, for example, it's something like 100 large firms account for about just more than three quarters of processed food sales worldwide. And what that means is that there's this, you know, availability of high-calorie, low-nutrient processed foods. So, obviously, it's a bit of a blight. So we have a situation where so many children don't have access to healthy foods, and enough of them, and others have too much access to all this processed food. So again, that's an area where governments can act. You know, things like sugar taxes, that's a proven part of legislation that works. Mm-hmm. Equally, the private sector
needs to do more. You've got to make sure things are labelled and there's strong controls on the marketing of these really unhealthy foods.
Now, I see many times there's this excitement in any given African city when they open a McDonald's or a KFC or any of these Western food institutions. They celebrate it as a sign of economic progress. But do you see any linkages between this food marketing and the increase in obesity in these places?
Oh, I think without a doubt UNICEF sees that, yes. I think that, you know, that we've learned that complacent regulations and that incredible marketing power are allowing this unprecedented amounts of unhealthy food onto the plates of millions of children. So yes, you know, the evidence is clear on that, and this report from UNICEF, you know, which is really the most the most evidence-based report on the state of nutrition in the 21st century, also shows when healthy options are affordable and convenient, children and their families, you know, will choose to put the right things into their meals. But there's no doubt the powering of marketing of those fast foods. People aren't quite aware of actually just how much sugar and poor nutrition is in them. So there's a responsibility on those companies running that to ensure people are fully aware of the foods that they're eating, and also a responsibility, of course, on governments to make sure they give people the education so that they can demand nutritious foods.
Mm. And I think the first question I should have really asked you, Mr. Elder, is for you to explain to our listeners the differences between malnutrition and undernutrition.
Well, it's interesting. Malnutrition tends to cover all of them. So mal literally means bad in Italian. So bad nutrition. And on bad nutrition, traditionally people think about that as being undernutrition. Children who just aren't getting enough nutrients, they're not getting the right nutrients, and they're not eating frequently enough. But of course now, with so much processed food out there, so much fast food, so much of the successful marketing, then another form of malnutrition is overweight, where children are just eating the wrong types of foods. Those foods, again, that are really high in calories and low in nutrients. They're the kind of types of malnutrition we talk about now. But obviously, undernutrition affects so many millions of young children, affects their growth and development. But a new thing in the last 10, 20 years is this malnutrition of overweight, just eating too much rubbish, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. That was James Elder. He's the UNICEF Regional Chief of Communication for Eastern and Southern Africa. And that's the end of our show today. We want to thank our guests. And many thanks to you for listening in to the show today. Whether you're listening in on radio or online from wherever you are in Africa or other parts of the world, we hope you can continue the conversation. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. Go to Facebook and search Upfront Show VOA. Like the page, share with your friends, leave a comment. We are always updating the page with new information on so many topics, on a range of topics, and on issues especially of concern to our audience in Africa and in the diaspora. Remember, as our elders say, leading a race does not mean that you will always win it. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Good day, Africa.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.